With repairs for the Lakonti on hold, the Alaska Marine Highway System dramatically reduces sailings to the Upper Lynn Canal. And details emerge about a bear mauling on the Chilkoot Trail. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Henry Leisha. Those stories and more are up next. A Skagway man was mauled by a brown bear on the Chilkoot Trail this week. It's the second reported bear attack in the Upper Lynn Canal this month. KHNS's Claire Strempel has more.
Details are still sketchy about what happened on a dark stretch of the Chilkoot Trail on Monday night.
The entirety of the incident occurred within seconds.
National Park Service Ranger Jason Verhaeghe says a hiker was about 8 miles from Skagway when he accidentally startled a brown bear in his path.
And this was one of those lightning-fast situations, which also is one of the determining factors where right now it is being currently treated as a defensive encounter because there was, to understanding, no posturing, no jaw-popping, none of that behavior that would indicate a predatory response from the animal.
Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park has not released the name of the hiker. The man reportedly carried bear spray, but didn't have time to use it before the bear retreated. Authorities wrote in a report that the local man was able to bind his wounds. He then found his way to a ranger's cabin, about a mile from the encounter. He used the cabin's solar-powered radio to call for help at around 2 a.m. At dawn, a chartered helicopter flew rangers and medics from Skagway Fire Department to the cabin. They arrived at 9 a.m. and were able to transport the wounded hiker to Dahl Memorial Clinic in Skagway. That's the extent of the information authorities are releasing about the attack.
Currently, we understand it was the lower right leg that was bitten. Can't share any of the specific injuries sustained.
Verhaeghe says the National Park Service and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game will post bear warning signs at the trailhead. Rangers don't patrol the Chilkoot Trail in the winter. The Park Service advises hikers and campers to carry bear spray, secure their food, and, when possible, travel in groups. That and make some noise when hiking to avoid startling bears. Verhaeghe says this bear encounter could have ended very badly.
Clearly, the outdoor wilderness knowledge of this individual may very well have played a part in keeping this person alive today.
The incident remains under investigation by the Park Service and Fish and Game. But at this time, there are no plans to pursue the brown bear suspected in the attack. Earlier this month, a pair of local hunters in Haines encountered an aggressive brown bear along the Chilkat River. One of the men sustained serious injuries. Reporting in Haines, I'm Claire Strempel.
Alaska Department of Fish and Game staff spent 3 days in Haines assessing the town's bear problem. Their goal was to address bear attractants and possibly haze or dispatch problem bears if necessary. According to Fish and Game biologist Carl Koch, the team encountered 9 different bears in that time. Koch says that none of the bears were aggressive. Staff did not make direct contact with any bears.
They were all showing fear of us. We didn't haze any bears the entire time we were in town because we couldn't get close to any of them.
Koch says that while one resident was warned about leaving out bear attractants, no citations were issued.
Frankly, a lot of the residences were in good shape. It's clear that there's a lot of people doing things to keep bears off their property.
However, unsecured dumpsters have been causing problems. Koch says that he encountered around 10 dumpsters that were not bear-proof. To prevent damage to property, Koch recommends emptying trash as often as possible. On Thursday, the Alaska Marine Highway System removed most of its previously scheduled sailings to and from the Upper Lynn Canal until spring. The MV Lakonti was expected to provide most of the winter ferry service to the Upper Lynn Canal this year. The ship is currently out of service for repairs. According to the Alaska Marine Highway System's sailing calendar, there will be only one ship a week, November through February. Yesterday, Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reported that the Lakonti is in need of more repairs than originally budgeted for. The Department of Transportation says it budgeted $1.2 million for the Lakonti's overhaul. Now, DOT estimates that $4 million worth of work is needed. State officials have delayed work on the Lakonti until further notice. The MV Aurora, another ferry that services small coastal communities in Southeast, is also being overhauled this winter. state officials haven't said what service would look like in Southeast with both ships offline. DOT officials say the plan is to bring both into dry dock for a side-by-side comparison next week to see which needs less work. Researchers are looking for ways that crab and fish in Alaska may be able to adapt to more acidic ocean water. With carbon dioxide levels rising on the planet, ocean water absorbs some of that CO2 and water becomes more acidic. That change is already impacting a variety of sea creatures. Members of the Alaska Ocean Acidification Network gave an update to Alaska's Board of Fisheries and a public presentation on the topic in Anchorage in October. The network is a group of researchers, managers, and stakeholders interested in the looming problem. Robert Foy is director of NOAA Fisheries Alaska Fisheries Science Center.
It's not that there hasn't been variability in the amount of carbon dioxide. It's not that this hasn't happened before. It's the speed at which it is happening during our lifetime.
Foy outlined recent research from a variety of sources on the impacts of ocean change on crab and fish. Researchers are testing different sea creatures in the acidic water expected over the next 30 to 50 years. Scientists have seen impacts on shell building, growth, reproduction, and survival on some types of shellfish. He said acidic water has shown an impact on survival of king and tanner crab, but not all of them.
So what it means is there's going to be winners and losers in the long run. And what it also means is that we have an opportunity that if we appropriately manage these species, then we may be able to sustain them through these stressors that we're expecting to see.
Toby Schwer with the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research explained that the hope was to manage fisheries for a tipping point when conditions change dramatically in the Gulf of Alaska. Schwer pointed to a change in ocean temperatures in the Gulf in the late 1970s.
You know, it's a mixed bag. Some species are going to increase, some species are going to slowly decrease, some species are going to rapidly collapse. And I think it's important to keep those, especially harvestable or commercial species, if those are the ones who are going to collapse rapidly, those are the ones we're going to keep a closer eye on.
Other past research has highlighted that fishing communities in Southwest and Southeast Alaska are at the highest risk from a changing ocean. The changing ocean chemistry is occurring at the same time that unusually warm seawater temperatures are also playing a part in fish distribution and survival. For KHNS, I'm Henry Leisha. Thanks for joining us. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website, khns.org.